So this bolt of lightning shot across the universe and inspired me with the idea that we have to do a podcast. And that's what I wanted to tell you. We should do a podcast. Okay, bye.
Okay, I hit record. I got it.
Oh, that was a close call. All right, we made it.
Yeah.
Welcome to Feature Creep, colon.
Built-in microwave, semicolon. No. Yes.
Lying.
Lies.
This is like, lies. It's all lies.
The one that's full of lies.
The one that's full of lies.
The one that's full of lies.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm Ned and this is Meg. Or that's Meg and this is
we've
Ned.
We've had lots of technical difficulties in the short time that we've been attempting to do this morning.
Yes. Yes. But we're here now and we've survived the terrible, no good, very bad podcast functions.
Right.
So we're... go ahead.
We're going to talk about lies and also Pinocchio because I got a copy of Carlo Collodi's original Pinocchio text adapted to comic book style by Casey Green. And it's great. And also, I love comics.
Right.
So I'm excited to talk about it.
Yes. Yeah. Man, lying is a thing. Oh, wait. But first. Yeah. So welcome to our podcast. If you are the first time listener, if you're listening, if you'd like to get a hold of us or complain about this podcast, you can email Dana, D-A-N-A at fcbm.io. You can also just go to our website, fcbm.io, where you can listen to all of our podcasts for free without any advertising. Or whatever, but you can email us. That's the main thing. And we'd like to hear from you. Okay.
Good job.
All right. Now for the
lying. Good. Sweet.
Now for the lying. Yeah. So, I think the OED defines a lie as... let's see.
A silence.
Oh, that's funny. It's
a
all just like
pause.
all the examples they have is not untruths. It's just like laying down to stay in a particular state.
Laying down.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. All right. So, the second definition of lie, which is what we're talking about today, which is an intentionally false statement. Used with reference to a situation involving deception or founded in a mistaken impression. I think we're going to start with, example lies. I think the full title of this was going to be the one that's full of lies with no consequences or something, or low consequences.
The one that's full of lies in which we casually
tell
a bunch of low grade lies with no consequences,
right?
I think is what it was, or something like that,
right? Like I could tell,
like my, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, like when I was in college, one of my roommates was super into competitive nail clipping, and so he,
what?
Yeah, competitive nail clipping. So he'd read this passage in Infinite Jest where one of the characters is clipping his toenails and the cuttings are flying across the room from the toenail clipper and every one is going into the waste bin. And so my college roommate got obsessed with this and was trying to turn it into a sport. So
great job.
That's
Did
a lie.
He succeed?
Yeah.
That's
no.
a lie. What? What? Butterbrickle is my favorite ice cream flavor.
Right. Right. This actually
Butterbrickle is everybody's favorite ice cream flavor who lives in the city of St. Cloud.
In the city of St. Cloud. this makes me think of this British game show that I enjoy watching from time to time called Would I Lie to You? And
oh, nice.
It's essentially essentially the way it works is like, if you've watched sort of British panel TV, which is like they're really known for it, like most of their shows are just variations of the same crowd showing up on a panel, and this time one of them's hosting something like you know, some topical thing, and then they play some trivia game or something. And Would I Lie to You is two teams with a host, and so usually there's three people on each team, and they're sort of local celebrities of some kind, sort of well-known public figures. And then they read these cards, and sometimes it's a true story and sometimes it's a lie. And then the other team gets to query the liar and find, and then they make a determination whether it's a lie or it's the truth. And so sometimes it's pretty funny, because like it'll be these like outlandish stories and it'll turn out it's true. And sometimes it'll be these outlandish stories, turn out it's a lie. And then, so, you know, and it's all just kind of a, it's all just sort of a setup for like sort of a funny sort of skit comedy, right?
Yeah.
So
that sounds fun. I'd watch that.
It is fun. Yeah. You can get a lot of clips on YouTube for free, which is great. Would I Lie to You? And it's pretty entertaining most of the time. I also imagine it's different in person than, like, you know, when you have the highly edited video content, it's very curated. It's a lie. Like, speaking of lying, right? Like, you know, and this is where I think like lying is kind of a funny thing, where it's not necessarily all bad, but is it? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. You, I feel like you were going to say something about lying earlier when we started, and I just,
I don't remember.
Well,
I'm not sure, but yeah. I like the sound of that game. So is it like, how do people win money if they lie convincingly on
it's,
that game?
It's like all the British game shows where it's all just, if there's any money, usually it goes to charity. But I don't know that there's money involved. I don't, on that game, I don't think there's money. It's just sort of like, it's just a panel show. Like it's sort of like, the best I can say is like, it's like Hollywood Squares, but the stakes are lower and there's not just some random person from the audience who's participating. Like it's just all celebrities, and they're just kind of going back and forth. And then at the end of the game, somebody, one team wins or doesn't win, and nobody really cares. I often don't even watch to the end. I usually just kind of watch like a couple of segments and then get on with my day. But so
I really like shows that people like fib or have to convincingly lie in order to win.
Yes.
Like, or they think they do. Like, this reminds me, you talking about Would I Lie to You reminds me of the television show The Circle, which Damon and I have become obsessed with. But there's a couple of different versions. There's like a British Circle, I think. And then there's like the American Circle, and there's the Brazilian Circle, and the Brazilian one is our favorite by far. The deal is a bunch of contestants are each sequestered in separate rooms in the same building, so separate apartments, and they can't see each other, and they can only communicate through like a closed circuit computer system, like, so they can't chat. Yeah, it's basically like a chat. Like, and they can represent themselves any way they want. So they can be themselves, or they can lie. And there is no mechanism built into this game for people to discern the truth until the big reveal at the end. People can have group chats and like public chats, and they can also have back channel chats, and they have public facing photos of themselves, and then they have a private collection of photos that they can share selectively, right? Okay. So everybody kind of like has, in most of these modern reality TV show games, like shifting alliances, like a setup of a phone tree of shifting alliances. The big question is always, is this person authentic, or are they like catfishing the rest of us?
Right.
And so what's my favorite thing is like paying attention to the astonishing array of assumptions that people make about each other and about whether someone's real or not. And I'm super interested in what drives people into this game thinking that they have to be someone they're not.
Right.
In order to win.
Oh, so, right. Like, okay.
so many times there have been, and like, I think there's something to this, and I haven't really thought about it or done any research, so I'm not going to like hypothesize too much, but oftentimes it's men who think that they have to be a hot chick to win the game.
Oh, they have to be a hot chick. So they're not even like, these photos aren't even of them. They're just photos they can choose from and say, this is who I am.
Yeah.
This like, you know, bombshell.
I'm this person. I'm this blonde lady. Yeah. Right. Or whatever.
Right.
And what's interesting, because this is filmed situated within several different like geopolitical areas and cultures, mm-hmm. it would be interesting to do like a latitudinal study of like how many people in each of these different locations like share these traits, right? Like of all of the contestants in England and of all of the contestants in Brazil and of all of the contestants in America, how many times did someone swap, like how many times did someone catfish other people and pretend to be someone they were not? And of those people, how many of them were this sort of person acting like this other sort of person?
Right.
This like two people pretending to be a single person. And so sometimes like there's all these elimination rounds on the show, right? Mm-hmm. And it's all a popularity contest. So they will like vote each other off the show for whatever subjective reasons they think validate the decision, right? And sometimes it just comes down to like, well, we like both of these people, but because of like how the game mechanics work, like somebody always has to end up in the bottom spot and like we have to vote on whether to eliminate them, blah, blah, blah. I don't remember the exact details of how the eliminations occur, but it has some popular vote involved in it. Or a point system or something like that. So,
right.
When people get eliminated, then they can like reveal to somebody else who they are as they exit the show.
Oh.
So they get to like tell somebody like, this is who I really am, or it was me the whole time, or whatever, and they can tell somebody. So sometimes the producers will grab those people on the way out and be like, do you want to come back in the game as someone else?
That's great.
And so they'll like pair them up with like another inbound new person because they always refill a slot. So there's like this revolving door of people on the show.
Yeah.
So some people come and go very quickly. Some people are there the whole time. Like it just is another metric that adds to the confusion and the uncertainty in the show, right? So sometimes there'll be an apartment with two people pretending to be a person that neither of them is.
Right.
Or something like that. So the thing is, I think that the people who think that they stand a better chance to win by being inauthentic are people who think we're going to have to lie convincingly.
Right. Yes.
And I'm interested in those people. Like, what's your plan?
Right.
So it totally made me think of that. And like in the Brazil game, the like everybody's like super fancy. Like the host is like super fancy and has like this like these amazing outfits and hair and all this stuff. And they like just the way they say the name of the show is like so much more fascinating and interesting. Like in America, they're like, it's the Circle. And in Brazil, they're like, Circle. We love that. I love it in Portuguese. Say it again.
That's
so
great.
I don't know. It's great. I mean, the American version is great because Michelle Buteau hosts it and she's like super funny. And I really like her. So watching the American show is great too. But I think the British one was our least favorite. If it was British, there was like an overseas one over the Atlantic some direction.
I find it funny how some shows seem to really work well in particular cultures and not others.
Yes.
Even though, like, I think that show Taskmaster that is a really fun show that originated in England, they've had some franchise spinoffs, but I think the U.S. one just kind of flopped. And
really?
I think partly having watched a couple episodes of it, it really missed a lot of the like the sort of like I don't know how to describe it. Like it just was missing a certain amount of like self-deprecating humor that the British are often good at. Not always, but like you know, there was something like it felt like it both didn't take itself seriously enough and also was taking itself too seriously, whereas the British one is this like good balance of like faux seriousness and everything super important and nothing is like anyway, I don't know. It just
Yeah, I I feel like the one that we watched that we didn't enjoy so much was where everybody took it really seriously and they were like trying really hard to like.
Yeah, it just,
I don't know. It was humorless.
There's this, like, there's one episode with this comedian actress, Jo Brand. I really love her. She's really hilarious. And she,
I love her too.
There's like some episode where it's like they're tasked with some like pretty like intense like timeline, like a lot of the tasks will be in and around this house that they have in
explain what Taskmasters is like, because I've watched it and I don't know if we've explained to anybody who hasn't seen it.
So if you've never seen Taskmaster, the original one is conceived by there's two sort of hosts. There's Greg Davies
Davies.
I'm just going to look this up to make sure I have it all right.
We can know these things.
And Alex Horn. So Alex Horn, I think, is the one who kind of originally kind of conceived of it. Mm-hmm. They have their own kind of funny dynamic between them, which also works to make the show entertaining. But essentially, cool. There's like five contestants who, again, it's this British panel game show hosts or game show situation where it's like a bunch of like British celebrities, right? So they're various comedians public figures typically. I don't know if they're political figures, but
Prince Andrew.
Yeah, Prince Andrew. Anyway, so they and then what happens is over like a series of a year or so, they often like show up at this house, the Taskmaster house that they have in Britain. And usually they're not working together. It's like one person will show up and then Alex Horn will give them a task and then they need to do something. So like they'll show up at the house and they might like be sitting in the living room and then they'll be handed an envelope and they'll read it. And on there will be this task. And they're wildly strange. Like sometimes it'll be go into the back room and smash a watermelon as quickly as possible. Or sometimes it'll be like find all the yellow ducks hidden around the house. And then they have like some time limit. And so they get filmed doing these tasks.
They're
and
like then, absurdist tasks.
Yeah. And then at the end, of the year or whatever for that episode or whatever period of time, they'll like we're watching as the audience, we're watching the five contestants together being judged by the Taskmaster on their performance. And so then it'll show the clip of the video and it'll be like, you know, be like, okay, Meg, like how many yellow ducks did you find? How long did it take? And then it'll be a lot of footage of you doing absurd shit. And a lot of it's just about creating these environments for stupid TV. Right.
And yes. So, yeah, of course.
So, I can't remember why I was talking about this. The cultural differences, right? So like it working well in England, whereas the US show just seemed to kind of not quite grab the essence of it. It would be if you were into that kind of thing, it would be kind of an interesting case study to like look at why one failed and why one succeeded. And you know, I enjoy sometimes
totally right of
just like pointless media like that, right? I mean, it's entertaining. It's not totally pointless. I just mean like, you know, sort of low stakes, right? If we never had this show, it's not like someone's going to die or we're advancing, you know.
Exactly. Anyway,
I don't know. Again, I'm digging a hole here where all of these things have value, like most art. Anyway,
you know I'm what with else? You.
Yeah. I did find this on the topic of lying. I thought this was kind of interesting. The Wikipedia article has a segment or a heading called types and associated terms.
I see that.
And so like there's quite a few different types of lies.
Yes.
Like I love some of these are really interesting. So there's the first one is a barefaced, bald-faced, or bold-faced lie is sort of like defined as a brazen, shameless, flagrant, or audacious lie that is sometimes but not always undistinguished or undisguised, and that is even then not always obvious to those hearing it.
I love flagrant in when it's attached to lying.
Yes. Yeah.
I can't think of it most like, can you think of any other context in which we were like they were flagrantly I mean, it usually, I think flagrantly specifically refers to lying. Maybe it doesn't. Well, I don't know. But anyway, I love it.
like, you know, this is like Trump's rhetoric, right? Like his thing is just like bald-faced lies, just like to the point where it's like, you're like, what? We just saw you just right. like, and it's like, he doesn't matter. He just plows through. It's just saying whatever he wants to be reality and right. forming it now.
Because when you don't have any regard for the truth value of a statement, the degree to which you're lying becomes irrelevant.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's all relative. So if you don't have anything to peg reality to, you're completely untethered from any like sense of comparison. Mm-hmm. Any lie is as good as the next because nothing means anything.
Right. Right. Yeah. Nothing means anything. Here's yeah, a term
nothing means anything anymore.
I'd never heard this before. So I've heard of a black lie. A black lie okay. being sort of defined as simple and callous selfishness.
Yes.
Usually okay. told when others gain nothing and the sole purpose is either to get oneself out of trouble or to gain something one desires.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'd never heard this term before. A blue lie is a form of lying that is told purportedly to benefit a collective or in the name of the collective good. So the origin of the term blue lie is possibly from cases where police officers made false statements to protect the police force or to ensure the success of a legal case against an accused. And I had not heard that before. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense because I was thinking, you know, the opposite of a black lie is a white lie, which is about sparing somebody else's feelings, right? I think right. a white lie is a harmless or trivial lie, especially one told in order to be polite or avoid hurting someone's feelings or stopping them from being upset by the truth, it says here. A white lie is also considered a lie to be used for the greater good, so pro-social behavior.
Right.
I think there's like whole sections of philosophy that deal with lying. And I haven't studied any of them.
I have this personal take on white lies that, and I want to be careful to say that I'm not like justifying lying. I have this example of, what might be considered a white lie, which is that, mm-hmm. When I graduated from college, this woman who we called aunt, was not actually my aunt. She was just a friend of my mom's uh-huh. like her whole life. And so she just was aunt so-and-so.
Yeah.
And so my mom and this woman had come to visit and my graduation was going to happen like in a month or two. And I'd said to her really explicitly, I was like, it would be really great if you could come. I would love if you could come to my graduation. She lived mm-hmm. quite a ways away and I knew that it was kind of a big ask for her to like fly back and come. And she said she would love to, and she'd see what she could do. Later,
okay.
my mom like took me aside and really told me, she was like really explicit. She's like, you know, your aunt is lying to you. She's definitely not going to come. She doesn't want to, or something, whatever she said. And I remember yeah. just thinking like, why would you, like, first of all, it's not a lie until the time passes and she doesn't come. Right?
Right. Yes. Second you can only of all, know that she was lying in retrospect. Yes.
Yeah. And also, is it a lie? She didn't say, she just said she would love to come and she would see what she could do. The fact that she yeah. might know that the odds of that working out are really low or it's like almost impossible and she didn't decide to share that information with me doesn't to me feel like she told me everything that she wanted me to know, which is she wanted me to know that she appreciated me inviting her and she was interested. Right?
Right.
And
yes.
You know, and the fact that she already knows that it's not going to work out isn't. To me is like, I, you know, at no point was like, I need you to commit to this or I need like, that was yeah. not the interaction that happened. The interaction was this like level of like, hey, I really care about you in my life and I need you to know that. And one of the things that's coming up that is important to me would be great if you could be there. And then she yeah. responded with like, I recognize where you are and I would really love to make that happen if I can. Which yeah. is, you know, from my point of view, it's like, you know, it's not
I don't
a lie.
Think anybody like, said anything that was a lie there. Yes, and, I agree with you.
And the reason, you know, and it also like I've known my mom a long time and like her manipulative bullshit is always the same, which is like she doesn't like to have other people have, you know, she's a fun hater, right? It's like she wants to be the one who yeah. gets all the glory and connection with her son or whatever to the point where no one right. else is allowed to have like good interactions with them. So I don't know why she decided yep. she felt like she needed to be sabotaging a relationship. And of course it didn't work, but it was like, that's kind of like, anyway. So yes. this idea of a white lie, like you know, lying, obviously, I think most people who are of an age where they've had some experience in life in social interactions where they've either like told a lie and then found it to snowball and be very difficult to maintain. You know, lying is kind of, and this is why I'm also like that idea of white lying. It's like, is it though? Like, was she telling a lie? Maybe in the moment she was just like, oh, I'm caught off guard. Well, I'm non-committal, but like, thank you.
Yeah.
That's not a white lie. It's, that's just
I think in the same way that she said, I'll see what I can do. And like, if she said, yes, I'm definitely coming, and then didn't show up, she would have been lying. If she said, yes, I'm definitely coming, and did show up, she wouldn't have been lying. But it's a consequentialist view of the lie, right? Like, the lie is only a lie when it, when at a specific point in time, she doesn't do the thing that she said she would do at that time, which would be go to your graduation. So, like, I don't think that she lied to you. I see what you mean about your mom, and I agree that she, like, just, you know, like, burn the bridges to the island so that nobody can be there but you and her. And then, and like, whether or not something is a white lie, because by definition it's minor and done to spare somebody's feelings, is really like raises the question of whether or not it's subjective. Like, we don't, I think, all have a like, we may approximate something like a shared reality, but you can't know what's in somebody else's head, and you can't know the whole spectrum of influences that give them a viewpoint on whether or not a white lie is appropriate. So, like, you're taking a risk when you white lie that it's not actually a white lie, it's just a lie, and you're actually hurting somebody, and you're making them distrust you because you failed to comprehend or appreciate the scope of what would inform somebody else's opinion about whether or not what you were doing was white lying.
Right.
Yes, exactly. So, like, I think to your point, like, is it a white lie? Like, I don't know. You're going to have to find out. I mean, ostensibly, you're lying so that nobody ever finds out. They just believe whatever you're saying. And you'll never know if it was a white lie or not, because that person never knows whether it was the truth value of the lie.
But this touches on the nature of, like, yes, this touches on the nature of, like, human communication, right? Which is that if I said every fucking thought that came through my head at every moment, because it was truthful, it would be insane. Like, you know, there's like, our brains are,
we wouldn't be able to function.
No, like, our brains are constantly bubbling up with ideas and thoughts, and the fact that you don't say them or carry through with them, or actually, like, because I thought that, you know, like, right now I could be like some negative thought, like, oh, Meg, you don't actually want to do a podcast with me right now or whatever. Like, because I thought that.
Yeah.
And if I accused you of that every time that thought, like, flew by my brain, which is easily both dismissed or in most cases, like, I just don't even think about it. It's like, well, that's a thing that could have been, but it's not, or whatever. Like, I don't know. I don't take it on board. But if we tried to take on board all of these things, it would be like impossible to function. Have you ever seen that movie, The Invention of Lying?
God, I am familiar with the title, but I don't think I've seen it.
So it's this movie Ricky Gervais made a couple, I mean, maybe in the late 2000s.
Okay.
It's a 2009 film, yeah. And basically in it, it's like this alternate reality where everything's kind of the same, except no one can lie. And so everybody says exactly, like, the idea is that everyone says exactly what's going on, like what they're thinking. So, like, there's this scene where Ricky Gervais is like working in, at the beginning, where he's like working in his office. He has this like job, like writing articles for a wiki or for an encyclopedia or something, or like he's somehow assigned to like some historical section, because there's no fiction, right? So his job is to write truthful stories about history, and he's got this like weird period in like world history that's just like super bland or something, and there's like, and his boss like shows up, and like, I guess like every day his boss shows up and tries to fire him, and his boss is like says, he's like, I'm trying to fire you, but I can't because I'm really nervous, I hate confrontation, and I'm afraid you'll be depressed. God. and like he just says all the things that we might, as like the internal monologue a little bit, right? And so it's yes. funny, and it's prescribed because it's a controlled written environment. But the reality is this would never be possible because all of those thoughts and feelings like are super mutable and they're, you know, changing all the time. And but in the yeah. context of the movie, it's funny because people are being like really, they're like, oh, you're at best, like your genes are bad. Like you don't fit conventional beauty. So we can't date, even though I like your personality or so. Like, it's just like this, like, you know, some people are like, oh, I really like someone who's brutally honest. And it's like, no, you don't. No, you don't. Because
you say this, you are lying.
Yeah. Like it's brutal honesty is not a thing. Like, it's nice and refreshing when people are assertive about what they need mm-hmm. and set good boundaries. I understand that. It's great socially because you're like, oh, there's not that like gray area of like, am I imposing without knowing I'm imposing, et cetera. It's like, no, I know where I am. Like I yes. enjoy those relationships. I like people who are more assertive about what they're thinking and needing and feeling. But that's also like requires a level of trust with both parties because when you expose yourself like that, like you also are open to attack from weird direction and like, you know, mm-hmm. and it's anyway, my point being is like this idea that like, you know, that like just absolute honesty is somehow achievable and possible. Like what is absolute? Like, are you being honest about everything you're thinking and feeling? That's absurd. Nobody wants that. Like it's that blend, no, right?
It doesn't serve anybody. Like, I think from like an evolutionary perspective, not great.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, to be successful, you have to like make things go smoothly. And sometimes that means like sanding off the rough edges first. I don't know. I think that like dishonesty, whatever flavor it comes in, mm-hmm. on some level is necessary or we wouldn't do it.
Right. It's right? also like, I mean, it's, is it even dishonest? It's one of those things where I think, you know, actions are ultimately the thing and, but actions, words are actions. And so you audit mm-hmm. and edit what you think and to what you want to say. And then, yep. and then ultimately it's like, are your actions and your words designed to mislead and like, you know, manipulate people? That's where we're really talking about lying, not whether or not what you're saying is a true reflection of the thing you just thought or felt.
Yeah.
Like, am I saying what yeah. I'm saying to manipulate you, to get you to do a thing that is self-serving for me and absolutely detrimental to you? You know, or am I honoring the idea that right. you have, you know, the person I'm talking to has some autonomy and I'm trying to honor that by providing them with information that might help them towards their own stated goals, et cetera, or our communal goals, et cetera. But yeah, I just think it's like, no, yeah. it's a fucking gray area all the way down.
Oh, yeah. I think you're totally right about that. I mean, if only for the reason that, like that I just stated that like it's got to be a gray area because you can never know with absolute certainty what's in somebody else's head and therefore how they will respond to something that you're going to say.
Right.
Or if they discover the fact that you've lied, how that will impact them. I mean, plenty of people lie to help other people, they think.
Right.
And I'm sure it works out a lot of the time.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I, whatever. I'm not like trying to morally judge one way or the other at the moment. I'm just saying like, you just can't know though how it's going to work out. You can't know by telling the truth either. Like just because you're telling the truth does not assign an immediate and objective like beneficence or moral superiority or like positive outcome. Like you could tell the truth that it will screw you over.
Right. Right.
In many cases, yeah. It doesn't, I don't know if that means if you should do it or not.
It's I imagine some people will be able to relate to this where they've met someone who demands that you lie to them because they punish the truth.
Oh yes. Where they make it impossible to be truthful.
Yeah. Like, because
in
they're
functional sense.
Yeah. Like yeah. The person I grew up with, my stepmother was like this, like you just had to lie. Like the only way to survive was just mm-hmm. to lie about everything all the time. you know, what's the weather like outside? It's raining, if it's sunny, like whatever it is. It's just, if everything you say is a lie, then you're safer than if you allow any truth to come out, because then she would immediately punish you for telling the truth.
Sure. I mean, there are some times when telling the truth is obviously an existential threat to the truth teller. So you like have, now you're stuck between the obligation, this abstract moral obligation to tell the truth, and the fact that doing so, it will like render you no longer living or whatever. Right. Like, yes,
right. Or the emotional
don't
equivalent.
Tell the truth if you want to live.
Right.
Yeah. Whatever it is. So, I mean, I think like there's so many, lying is such an interesting topic because there's so many facets to it, like why people do it, when people do it, what the purpose of doing it is, whether it's worth it or not, how you measure that, so many things, right? This also makes me think of that that article that I shared with you from neurosciencenews.com about researchers overrating their ethical practices.
Yes.
And this is about lying too, because it says, so like this article from neurosciencenews.com says researchers overrate their ethical practices, and it's from February 26, 2024. The summary says, a new study identified significant overestimation among researchers regarding their adherence to good research practice compared to their peers. So what they're talking about is how good, how morally good are you? How ethically sound are your practices compared to other people in your field? So they surveyed 11,000 Swedish researchers, and they uncovered that there is a widespread belief in one's own ethical superiority, not just individually, but across entire research fields. What this means is that, for example, 55% of researchers believe they adhere to good practices as well or better than their peers, which is statistically impossible.
Right.
Like,
that
half, you,
over
not
half
everybody
cannot be
can,
better than over half. Look, sorry.
Right. Yes. Also, nearly 63% of the people they asked rate their research field's ethical standards as highest or higher than others, with medicine showing the greatest overestimation. So doctors think they're better than everybody is what that tells you, literally.
Yeah, but my specific field of study is the most ethical. That's why I chose it.
It's the best. Yes, right. Because you chose it on purpose because you are an ethical person. The study underscores the human tendency to view oneself and one's group in a favorable light, potentially hindering objective self-assessment and interdisciplinary cooperation. I take some issue with saying hindering objective self-assessment, because I think the concept of self-assessment cannot by definition be objective.
Right.
So like, I don't know about that part, but I do think it's funny that everybody's like, oh yeah, I'm more ethical than your average person. That ask people about whether they think they're smarter and they'll say the same thing, right?
Right.
Not everybody can be smarter than everybody. That's not how this works. So like somebody's lying.
Right.
Do they know they're lying?
They
must know, or well, maybe not.
No, I mean, that's part the self-delusion, right? Which we all kind of do. You know, you and I, I don't think of it so much as a self-delusion, because I think we both know exactly where we are in terms of like how great our podcast is, which is, it is the greatest.
It is the greatest. I mean, it's 49th in podcasts about art and design in Ireland, but
right, according to that email,
that's basically the greatest.
Yeah, which is basically like peak. So maybe that's not a good example, because we're just so amazing that it can't really. But I imagine like other people might have this problem. Definitely not us. Where
never us.
Where they overestimate how great they are in comparison to the cohort of like people that are working within that field. I can't remember where I was going with this. I'm just overwhelmed with how great we are.
I love how great we are.
Me too. Yeah.
The researchers cracks me up go ahead. Did you remember?
Oh, I was going to say that was a good example of puffery as a type of lie, an exaggerated claim typically found in advertising and public publicity announcements. such as the highest quality or at the lowest price. For sure, this podcast is the highest quality for the lowest price.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we have nailed the sweet spot in that like Venn diagram. Like the quality there's an to overlap price ratio. Of like, yeah, we've got it.
Yep.
We've got it dialed in. I like that an April Fool is a lie or a hoax told or performed on April Fool's Day, which is self-evident when you read it out loud, but it's so funny that it's like a lie tailored to a specific day.
Yes, yes. It's appointment that's lying.
So funny. Appointment lying.
No. So we can't lie until this date and time. I don't know that these are still trending, but for a while on social media, or at least on like YouTube and other kind of video platforms, I'd noticed there were a lot of sort of prank videos, and I found those to be like pretty shit. It's hard to watch them. You know, there's like April Fools is one thing where it's like, I'm going to, you know, play some jokes or whatever. I find like the biggest issue I have with most prank style videos is the problem of consent.
Yes.
Like,
And I think, go ahead.
You can't, for the most part, like most of the contrived sort of pranks that people come up with, the core of it is about not having consent from the participant. And I just find that like abhorrent. Like it's just like this is just.
I mean,
a bad
I
culture.
Guess any lie disregards the consent of the person who is the subject of the lie.
Right, and that. But I would say that's narrowing the definition of a lie, which is to say, which would then like in the case of my example of my aunt saying that she would want to attend my. My graduation ceremony. I would argue that was consensual. Like there was an agreement that we want, like she wants to have a good relationship with me. I want to have a good relationship with me. She wants to convey the understanding that this was a nice thing I asked. And also like, so that communication, like then it wouldn't be a lie under that definition because both parties consented both during and after, especially after. Right.
Yes.
Where it's like, yes, like this is the conversation. This is the dialogue we want to have. This is, you're saying something that is, from my point of view, truthful in its intent.
Yes.
You know, because also, like I said, going back to like what you say, you know, what's going on in your internal thought process and dialogue is not, it is mutable, so it can't by definition be like this like factual thing where it's like written in stone, like you know, maybe at the time she was feeling like, oh no fucking way, I definitely don't want to do that, but then she also was like, well, I don't want to say that, like of course you don't want to say that. This is a fucking weird thing to say. Of course you say politely, like being polite is not lying necessarily. You know, one can lie. I think it's more about that intent, right? That idea of like,
I think that you can judge the moral, like the moral value of a lie based on what you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. That sort of brings that.
I mean, but like, again, what she said wasn't a lie. So like,
right. Right. But I think that idea of, lies being sort of inherently like working against consent, right. There's, you know, now we're in the realm of like boundaries, right? Like, you know, one can argue that, we all have this sort of right to a boundary of like, we can say whatever the fuck we want and not necessarily, you know, within the context of like, if I'm speaking within my sort of personal space, whereas, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's all gray, right? Like if I say something like knowing that my words that I'm about to say, like I've been put in a position of power where the thing that I say has weight and bearing on the actions of others. Like I'm telling you information that is going to guide your actions. And then I purposefully mislead you into harm in some way. That's lying, right? I think that's pretty clear. But then if we kind of get into the gray area of like where, you know, we're talking about like April Fools, where I'm lying to you, like a surprise birthday party, right? I'm lying to you and telling you that there's no birthday party, and then later I throw a party with all your friends for your birthday. It's all of this is like the fundamental harm comes from that lack of consent, right? Like some people hate that.
Yes.
And for good reason. I mean, because
I don't like surprise parties. I don't like them. I don't like them.
Yeah. I don't know very many people who do. Like I have thrown one surprise party in my life and it was very successful, but I also had to really think about the person who was being surprised and like really mm-hmm. consider what they wanted and how this would impact them. And then even in that, I tried really hard to create a scenario where they would have opportunity to, like, it wasn't a surprise that it was their birthday or that there was a party. It was more a surprise, like how many people attended. Right. Like,
sure.
And even that, I was a little bit nervous, but I knew that all of the people who were coming were very close with this person. And so it worked out. But man, like, that's not something I don't take that lightly.
It's dicey.
It's dicey. It's fucking dicey because you're in that situation where, you know, this, like, I don't know. You know, I don't know how that person feels. And I've absolutely overridden their consent and made decisions for them.
Yeah. I think this is also like, pardon me, the example of like a surprise party is like, if for whatever reason, the person who's being surprised is not excited about the surprise, mm-hmm. now they have the pressure of letting down a whole bunch of people.
Right.
And that makes it so that you can't be honest about how you're feeling about not being happy with the surprise.
Right.
So you're forcing someone else to become a liar for your lie because you threw a party that they didn't know they were having in this example. And then in order to spare everybody else's feelings who were nice enough to show up for a party nobody asked for.
Right.
Like you have to pretend like you're enjoying seeing them when maybe not. Like, if I was out doing something, like the classic setup for a surprise party is you have to like lure somebody away so you can control their movements and then bring them to the party at the exact timing that's necessary for the surprise to go off, right? So it requires like the collusion of a lot of people in a lie, like a lot. You have to rope a lot of people into a lie. And I guess those people have to think that it's for the betterment of the person they're lying to or they wouldn't do it.
Right.
So like everybody thinks you're going to love this or we wouldn't be doing it. And then you have to show up and love it.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, like just the fact that somebody had a plan and didn't tell me what it was, but it directly involved me, even if it was just a birthday party or something like that, I'd probably still be pretty pissed.
Yeah. And I, you
and
know,
then this... I mean, I'm talking about myself here. I'd have to be like, oh, I'm so happy to see everybody when I'm like, I just want to be alone.
Right. Right. So what I did was, essentially I planned a day of sailing with a group of people who were going to be on the boat. And so there was, I think like 8 of us on the boat. So it was already a party. And then we stopped for lunch on the boat. We stopped at a restaurant. Like we stopped at a dock and docked, and then a larger group showed up for the lunch party. That this person didn't know about. Like they knew that we were going to lunch and we were going to celebrate. They just didn't realize the full scale of it. And it wasn't so large. It was just like another 10 people or something who showed up and we kind of had lunch and cake and then we got back on the boat. And so I felt like that was about as acceptable. Like they also were somebody who just seemed pretty receptive to this concept. Like, I think I got the whole idea in the first place because they talked about some other friend having a surprise party and they were kind of like, man, that was kind of cool. And so I was like, okay, you know, I think I can make this happen. You know what I mean? Okay. Like, it wasn't like, I'm not someone who sits around and thinks like, oh, people love surprise parties. Like this, my partner at the time had conveyed the idea that they they liked the idea of it, but no one had ever thrown them a surprise party. And so I was
is basically an inducement to surprise them with a surprise party at some point.
A little bit. Yeah.
Like if somebody states explicitly, I would love to have a surprise party. I wish someone, no one's ever thrown one for me. I'd like to have one day. What they're saying is please throw me a surprise party.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
That's probably like a weird shade of the truth too. Like you can't, if you ask for it outright, it's not a surprise. right? So you have to do this sort of like dance around it, right?
I mean, I was pretty good. Like once that seed was like pretty well cemented, like it was, you know, it wasn't even, I don't think it was like immediately their next birthday. It was like something that I had like, you know, kind of locked away. And like, I definitely, they were surprised in a positive way. Not my,
that's funny.
Yeah. I think I'd be indifferent about it. Like, I don't think I'd be like overjoyed. I'd just be kind of like, okay. Like, you know, assuming that the person who sort of organized it knew me well enough to know, you know, like I enjoy social environments and like, you know, surprise mm-hmm. visitors is, I don't really like surprise visitors at my home. I don't think anybody does.
Yeah. No.
But in the context of like the right context where it's like, you know, I know I'm going to a party, but I don't know who's going to be there or whatever that can be. The way it's portrayed in the film, like in TV and film where it's like, oh, nobody really even wished me happy birthday. And then it's like the very end of the night and now everybody's like out the apartment or something. That just seems fucking stupid to me. Like,
yes.
Like, what? Like, I'm going to make you like, we're all going to work together to make you feel really depressed. And then the high is going to be even more high because then we all were just kidding. We do remember it's your birthday. Whatever the
fuck. We do love you. Yeah. We spent all day making sure you felt like nobody loves you, but now everybody loves you.
Right.
Aren't you relieved?
Yes.
We got relief for your birthday. We got you your favorite thing.
We got disappointment. Yes.
So there's also some other stuff on this list of types and associated terms that I like the bluffing, which is pretending to have a capability or intention that you don't have.
Yes.
So it's funny because like none of these are a surprise to me. Like I'm reading this list and I'm not like, oh, I've never heard of that kind of lying before. But it never occurred to me how much differentiation there was before seeing it all in one place like this.
Right. Right.
Like there's bullshit, which is also known as BS, bull crap or bull, and does not necessarily have to be a complete fabrication. While a lie, God, it's so dry here right now.
Oh, no.
Like the fan's blowing because it's like really cold outside, so the heat is just like constantly running and I'm like dying. While a lie is related by a speaker who believes what is said is false, bullshit is offered by a speaker who does not care whether what is said is true because the speaker is more concerned with giving the hearer some impression. And this is totally what I think the what you mentioned earlier about Donald Trump. I was like, he doesn't care about the truth value of the statement, so everything he says is bullshit.
Yeah, right.
There's a fantastic book called On Bullshit by Harry Frankfurt, who's a philosophy professor, and it's all about the subject of bullshit. And he's like, if it's something that's so common in our lives mm-hmm. and like so ubiquitous, we should probably have a theory of understanding of it. And so he wrote this philosophy book on bullshit, and it's super good. There's also a cover-up, which is used to deny, defend, or obfuscate lies, errors, or embarrassing actions or lifestyles or lies made previously. Defamation is a communication of a false statement that harms the reputation of some entity.
Mm-hmm.
Deflection is when you avoid the subject so you don't have to acknowledge the lie itself. And exaggeration, obviously, is puffing up some of the details or stretching the truth to make something appear more powerful, meaningful, or real than it is. And it's also related to hyperbole, when a person's statement is like exaggerated and not meant to be understood literally. They list fake news here, half truths, honest lie. That's interesting. An honest lie may be identified by verbal statements or actions that inaccurately describe the history, background, and present situations. There's generally no intent to misinform. So this is like an honest lie is when you like lie without meaning to lie. That's super interesting.
I mean, I think that the sort of fake news cycle leans on this, right? They, you know, I mean, one could argue that most people that are repeating the fake news know it's fake. But I would argue that many people, as they eat that up and then take that on as true, are sort of telling honest lies, right? Like they believe this, and this is the information they've been giving, been given. You know, I don't know. It's
Yeah.
So I don't. This one has a weird statement where it says citation needed because there's definitions of a lie doesn't necessarily. So at the end of the honest lie, this segment, it says because of this, it's not technically a lie at all, since by definition there must be an intent to deceive for the statement to be considered a lie. I don't think that's true. Like the OED defines a lie independent of whether the person believes it.
Right.
You know, a lie is more synonymous with untruth than it is with the intent of the person. Now, what we're describing here in terms of like types and associated terms with lies, like an honest lie is the kind of lie where the person believes it, where they believe that they're working with factual information.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily make it not a lie. Like, but anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know how you pronounce this word. Jocose?
Jocose, yes. J-O-C-O-S-E.
Right.
Like jocular.
Jocular, right.
Another, yeah.
Are lies meant in jest? Intended to be understood as such by all present parties. So I would say this is a form of my humor that I often use, whether or not it's received well is different.
Well, I've experienced this because you and I both do this, and I think you and I say things that we think to everybody else seem like obvious and joking lies, and other people take us seriously.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, which just illustrates my point that like you think it's gonna land a certain way and then it doesn't.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's so funny. Oh, here's another one. A gray lie is told partly to help others and partly to help ourselves.
Oh, interesting. More colored lies.
Yeah. More colored lies. Yeah. So under the jocose lies, it says the Crick Crack Club in London arranges a yearly grand lying contest, and the winner is awarded a cup that they win. In the United States, the Burlington Liars Club awards an annual title to the world champion liar.
That's fantastic. I'd love to watch that. I bet that's good.
I would love to see a contest of convincing lies. There's a game that I really enjoy called Balderdash, and it has these like a word or a phrase or something on it, and then several accurate things about it, and then you're supposed to make one up and insert it, and if the people think that yours sounds like the truth more than the actual truth, then you get the points.
This is I've often played this game. The game you describe, I've played Balderdash, but the versions that I've enjoyed the most are what I've heard called Dictionary, like a party game where everybody has a pieces of paper, and then one person gets a very large unabridged dictionary, and then they go through and they choose a word, and so they just say the word, and then everybody writes down a definition for it, and then the person reads all the definitions and sneaks in the usually to do it best, you kind of paraphrase the definition from the dictionary so that it's not written in that sort of formal language, and then and then everybody votes on which definition it is, and then people get points assigned based on whether they got a certain number of votes. If you voted for the correct, I think you get a point if you vote for the correct one, or I don't remember exactly, but to my mind it's like the points are less interesting. The interesting thing is just in that moment of like who wrote came up with these interesting definitions. Balderdash.
Totally.
Yeah, it's a fun, it's definitely really fun. And that's actually kind of an example of they have I just saw it where they talked about like poker as an example.
Mutual deceit.
Mutual deceit. Yeah, mutual deceit. So like, you know, card games are based on mutual deceit, right? Like we've all agreed that we're going to lie to each other. That's how this game works.
Yes, lying is part of the game.
Yeah, so.
That's like a weird liminal space, right?
Yeah, yeah, it is a weird, yeah, because the rules are kind of flipped on its head, right? Where the expectation is that you definitely don't tell me the truth.
Right. So. In philosophy, we learned about a noble lie, which it says here on Wikipedia, could also be called a strategic untruth, one that would normally cause discord if uncovered, but offers some benefit to the liar and assists in an orderly society, therefore potentially being beneficial to others. It is often told to maintain law, order, and safety. That was kind of what I was talking about earlier.
Yes.
When you said, like, if when we were talking about the Ricky Gervais movie, the Invention of Lying, and how we like it's shit would cease to function. Like, we could not exist in a state where lying was not at least partly utilitarian and engaged in with some regularity.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Should we talk about, speaking of lies and fiction, or the idea of fiction, which is, you know, a kind of lie, should we talk about Pinocchio?
Yes. So, since we're an art and design podcast, I wanted to share a recommendation for this book that I got in the mail. I kickstarted it. It's by a comic book artist named Casey Green. And they made this book as a visual, like, embellished representation of the original text of Pinocchio. So most people are familiar with Pinocchio through, like, children's books or Disney, the Disney version of it.
Right.
Everybody's seen the Disney version of Pinocchio. But like most fairy tales and, like, strange children's stories, the original is way weirder than Disney gave it credit for.
Yeah. And the Disney movie's, like, pretty weird. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Disney movie's pretty weird. But, like, it's even stranger if you look at the original text. And so when Casey Green made this, they said most original fairy tales are much darker than their Disney-fied counterparts. The original Pinocchio tale is far more bizarre, wild, and ham-fisted than it is than in more recognizable adaptations. But that's exactly what charmed me to it. And as far as I remember or have looked for, no other cartoonist took it so directly head-on like this. So I wanted to be your guide in this old twisted tale. They made a book that's enormous. Like, I'm not sure if it says how many pages are in here. It's more than 300 pages.
Wow. Yeah.
Of, like, it's a large book too. I mean, it's very tall and very wide, and it's like, double printed, you know, letter, on both letter, sides of all the pages.
Letter size. Right?
Yeah. Like 8.5 by 11 book.
A4,
and it's printed in black and white. But the cartoons are fantastic. Like, it's so great. There's so much motion in them, and they're very exaggerated and absurdist, which is perfect because all of these stories are very weird. Yeah. So the overall aesthetic of it is, like, really delightful. And if you want to buy it or check it out, you can go to Pino, P-I-N-O as in Pinocchio, pino.caseygreen.com, which is spelled out P-I-N-O. Dot kcgreendotcom.com. And anyway, it's really cool. You could also just Google Casey Green Pinocchio and it'll take you straight to it. But it's super awesome if you're the type of person who enjoys comics. Damon and I were talking the other day about how he finds that the comics get in the way of the storytelling for him. He just wants the text so that he can imagine it. He doesn't want to have to read and look at the pictures because the pictures are so off, far off from what he would have in his head if he was just reading it.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was really interesting. But I love comics. Maybe you do too.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
This is a really good one. It, highly recommend.
That's awesome. Yeah. That story is, it's kind of that. I like, somebody got me, like, a Tall Tales book collection when I was a kid.
Mm,
and it kind of has that same, Pinocchio has that same kind of, like a tall tale, but, like, really fleshed out. You know, it's a pretty long story for sure. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, it's super weird. There's, like, it kind of reminds me a lot of, like, stories in America of hobos and all the crazy adventures they get up to, and very, like, there's a, it's very dark sidey.
Yes. Yeah, it's very exciting indeed. Yes.
Yeah. It's like, it's kind of weird that Disney was like, let's take this like really sinister story about fucked up shit that happens to vulnerable people and turn it into a children's movie. Right. Also, I just want to go on the record right now as saying, I knew all along, I saw two Disney movies, and I know that a trend is not defined by two data points, but on the third movie, I was like, that's it, Disney hates moms. As a little kid, I saw it. I was like, why does Disney hate everybody's mom and kill them in order to have a storyline? Right. It's like, the third fucking movie I saw. I saw like Bambi. And I was like, they start out the movie by killing the mom? That's rough. And then, you know, I was like a little tiny kid. And then I like saw more and more. Cinderella, mom's dead. Got a wicked stepmother. Sleeping Beauty. Oh, a woman's going to poison you to death. And your parents are going to fail to protect you.
Right.
What? Like the mom might as well be non-existent in that movie. Maleficent is amazing, though. Anyway, I'm just saying, I saw it. I saw it, and it's still a problem. So do we have colors of the day today?
I believe we do. Our research team just messaged us. So we have two colors of the day. So welcome to the ending segment of our podcast, where we definitely don't talk after we do this segment, except for when we do. we have two colors of the day. We often try to present colors of the day, since we're an art and design podcast, and this is your daily dose of art and design. Here we go. Today's colors of the day, they will change your life, cure cancer, fix everything, make you rich. These are the colors you want to be incorporating into your art projects for today. So, we have uninhabited.
And we're telling this for your own good, so don't question us.
Yeah. We've got
the truth value
uninhabited humidity and hyperbolic flare. So uninhabited.
They are gorgeous.
They are gorgeous. Uninhabited humidity has the red, green, blue value of 27, 214, 214. So it's got equal parts green and blue and very little red. It is.
I love that. We've never had that happen before.
I don't think we have.
Where we had two matching numbers.
That's true. Yeah. No, this is and so then we've got the hexadecimal value for this color. So if you're not familiar, you can type hexadecimal values directly into the Googler and it will show you the color. And the way you do that is you type in what modern day refer to a hashtag as opposed to the pound sign or the octothorpe. But you're going to type in hashtag 1 Bravo Delta 6 Delta 6. Once again, that's hashtag 1BD6D6. You type that into the Googler, you should see this color, but you should see a very bright sort of teal. I don't know. How would you describe this?
It's kind of a teal, yeah, or like an aquamarine.
Aquamarine, yeah.
Seafoam. It's great. Almost, these colors together reminded me of, kind of seafoamy. These colors together totally reminded me of like the 1980s.
Yes, yeah. So the other color, hyperbolic flare, has an RGB value of 187,234,4. So it's a lot of red and green. The hexadecimal value is hashtag Bravo Bravo Echo Alpha 04. That's hashtag BBEA 04.
So great.
This is like a I don't even know how to describe this. Like it's like a
It's like an electric lime green.
Yes. Yeah. Like, yeah, that just really, really bright, bright lime green. Really electrical.
The two of these things together are like so complementary to each other. Like they are wild together. I would wear a striped sweater with these colors.
Oh yeah,
next to
this
other.
Would be like offensively cheerful.
Yes, offensively cheerful. Yeah. Well said.
Yeah.
And like the way that they appear on the screen, it's the blue above and the green below, and so it kind of looks like an endless horizon.
I
want to live there.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So uninhabited humidity and hyperbolic flare. These are the colors to incorporate in your art projects today, or maybe just wear out if you're just feeling, these are like inappropriately spring colors for this time of year.
Yeah, like calm down.
Just calm down. You need to just calm the fuck down.
Just random strangers. If you wear these colors, strange people are going to approach you in public and be like, calm down.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
If you're in a meeting and you're wearing these colors and you're speaking at a regular volume, people will be like, why are you shouting? Because the aura you give off with these colors in combination will just be like screaming all the time about how happy you are.
Right. Yes. Yeah, they're really great. They're these might pair well with like, well, with each other, definitely.
Yes.
Yes. I'm trying to think like what else you might, maybe like a brown.
I'd put them with brown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, if you wanted to tone this down, you would use these as accent colors against like a dark sort of like maybe a chocolate brown.
Yes.
You know, or well, really that's most shades do. Of brown. I would say less reddish and more like a cooler brown though.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my take.
Yeah, like a dark chocolate.
Yeah, like a dark chocolate, exactly. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Great. All right.
Cool.
That's all the lies we have. So it turns out it wasn't full of lies, but we had we tried our best.
we put a handful of lies in.
Yeah,
I'm actually really bad at lying.
Yeah, I
just don't ever do it, so I'm not like good at it.
I've definitely, you know, I had the opportunity growing up to live in a household where, like I said, you know, lying was the only way you survive. So I have a certain amount of that, but I'm not proud of it, nor am I like, it just is what it is. You know, it was my particular like coping mechanism. I've tried really hard as an adult to distance myself from that in the sense that like, that's not the preferred relationship I like to have. I'd love to have like, mm-hmm. you and I have a great relationship. Like there's just no stakes. So we pretty much just say whatever the fuck all the time. Like it's just, you know, there's really no, There's really just no ever any incentive to lie to each other, which Mm-mm. is fantastic. I'm also very forgiving of lying, especially as like, you know, when lies come to light and you start to understand like why someone was that way. Usually I find most people seem to lie because they're protecting things that are in their personal space. Like, they're protecting their feelings, mm-hmm. they're protecting their own existence. And I'm usually very forgiving of that, because usually if someone's lying to me, it means I've like overstepped my bounds and I've stepped into like, I've stepped over a boundary where now they're struggling with how to either enforce that boundary or assert some control over something that really they should be able to. And so I try not to be, like if I do find out they lied, I'm not into like punishing somebody for that. I try to just be understanding and be like, okay, like I get why you felt that way. Like this power dynamic is not right then, because I don't want power over you. I would like to have, you know, mutual benefit. Like, but
yeah,
that's my personal take. So
that makes sense, I think.
Yeah.
I believe.
Right.
We did it.
We did it. We made it.
This was the worst podcast ever, and I'm never doing this again.
100%. I'm with you. Yeah.
That was
it.
That was a lie, too.
That was a lie. Okay. Thanks, everyone.